RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark Delay podcast with...
Didn't even know it was Wednesday, Val, and...
Beans! It doesn't... You don't even know what day it is anymore, Frank.
Nope.
You really don't.
No, especially since we didn't... We technically didn't have a Monday show. We pre-recorded it on Easter, so, you know...
I actually kind of liked that.
It was fun.
Wasn't it nice to have a Monday?
Yeah, it really was. In fact, if you wanted to do more of that on Sunday mornings... Let me know.
I didn't have the day off or anything, but like, because I had to take my husband to get that tooth out of his mouth. But, and I did that in the middle of the craziest weather we've had here in quite some time. We had those southern storms that came through, and we lost some people here in South Carolina because of tornadoes. It was pretty sad.
Wow.
But yeah, no,
I saw the reports of the tornadoes.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. As a matter of fact, the coronavirus press conference that Governor McMaster did was more... a press conference about the damage from these storms than it was about coronavirus. So there was that. However, when I got home, it turned sunny and I got to work on a whole bunch of other stuff. And I was like, it was actually kind of relaxing to not have a Monday show. And I didn't like saying that out loud, but it was true.
Oh, you can say it out loud. It's, you know, we both have a lot of things that fill up our weeks, and it's usually everything that fills up our weeks or things that we like doing, but everything in moderation, or else you're carrying a heavy load. So when you find something that actually made another part of your week feel a little bit more like you can breathe.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah,
you know what's crazy? We haven't missed a show since we started three times a week.
There may have been, I don't know, there may have been one or two like holiday outright cancellations. But other than that, even if I'm not here, you usually pick it up. I've covered at least a handful of shows by myself.
Yeah.
So
we've done a couple. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been pretty consistent.
Yes. And we have no shortage of things to talk about today. I want to talk about this the other day. We didn't get to talk about the press conference where Donald Trump played the video.
That was amazing.
I was like, oh, my God, they just had to sit there and listen to that, Frank.
Yep. Yep. I did not play the actual compilation on my show last night because I felt like it would take too much time away from covering the amazing meltdown afterwards. And the fact that they actually tried to characterize the compilation itself, the video
propaganda.
As propaganda, and they said Trump had a meltdown. It's like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah.
He played back everything they said. It is video evidence of they said, you tell me how lack of context makes any of what we saw any different. And then of course they have a meltdown, which is ironic because all they do is project what's going on inside their own little worlds, a complete meltdown propaganda. You saw the collection of CNN lower thirds that they were putting up.
Yes.
Oh, that was the best part.
There are no words. Like the you could like feel the uncomfortable oozing off of them. Like they were uncomfortable in their own seats, and then for them to call themselves propaganda was something else. I'm getting a message from Frank right now via Skype.
Look at those four lower, and for everybody out there, a lower third image is what was what pops up on a television show or any kind of media show that has a lower third image on the bottom of the screen that either has somebody's name or a small ticker or a headline of some sort. You've seen it all before. And people took screen grabs of four different types of lower thirds that CNN was filtering through over the course of just a few minutes.
Let's read them, shall we?
Yeah, Rena, go ahead.
Angry Trump turns briefing into propaganda session. Trump uses task force briefing to try and rewrite history on
history
on coronavirus response. Trump melts down in angry response to reports he ignored virus warnings. Angry Trump. He doesn't look angry to me. Uses propaganda.
No, he wasn't angry.
Uses propaganda video produced by government employees at taxpayers' expense.
That was the best one. That was the best one. As if he dedicated an entire swath of the government to producing this little compilation that people like Mark Dice do every morning in their kitchens.
He actually didn't. If you look on the video, it is watermarked from a news organization.
Oh my God.
So that's a lie.
So it makes it even better.
As is everything else. And I guess this is a good segue, Frank. Let's go to Drudge real quick.
Oh, no. What's going on there?
Friday, I went to Drudge and I literally felt like I wanted to jump out a window. It was so overwhelmingly it affected me in such ways that I needed to. I was in such despair after.
You need Brioche on hand. Whenever you go to Drudge, you need Brioche on hand. I only go there. I go there for fodder. That's pretty much it.
Let's read the first headline on the left-hand side. Why don't you go ahead and do that for us, Frank? Given if people listened to the show the other day, they'll understand.
No peak yet. U.S. deaths set single day record.
So we haven't hit peak death, Frank.
No, peak death has not come. And they told us that peak death was going to come on Easter Sunday.
I know. And we didn't have it. No peak death. Now scroll down a little bit more. Look at the main headline.
Trump orders his name on virus checks.
It's not even true. It's not true.
So what foreign body bought out Drudge again? I forget. It's not like his site anymore or something. It's been monetized in some way.
I don't know.
Whatever.
Now.
But that's not the least of it.
What? Go ahead.
No, just in general with the we're talking about the spin and the pivoting away, because right now what we're seeing is there's a little bit of a jockeying for power over the narrative of how bad things still are, because it's the paranoia and what's been done to society. That's probably not going to go away completely at all. This is going to leave a scar, and an ugly one too. But you can tell right now we're at a position where people who are in a position to try to craft or maintain one narrative over the other really want to keep things where they are for a while in a believable way. Mm-hmm. And others are getting more and more confident in saying, listen, we're leaving the worst behind us now. And the projections, which are based on the same kind of it's like the same kind of dumb projection models that we are always fed over this climate change stuff that never pans out. The projections that led to everybody, these governors and mayors shutting down the country, they are not panning out the way they are. And if we had these numbers or a grasp on what this could really do in mind a couple of months ago, perhaps we wouldn't be where we are right now economically and everything else. So I'm seeing this jockeying and everybody's trying to brace for one impact or another.
So there are different tools being utilized to kind of like sway people's opinions and public opinion. And one of the things that really sparked outrage amongst a lot of folks was President Trump saying that he has the ultimate authority over what the states do. And I saw that you tweeted a little thread about this.
Yeah, three tweet thread.
Yeah, which is weird for you. So every time I see a little chain between your tweets, I'm like, what does that have to say? And I published an article on Uncover DC this morning by Daniel Babinski. And Daniel is in Idaho. And he was at, we talked about this the other day, that he was at that Ammon Bundy thing. Oh, real quick, before we get into this article. You know who we have on the show on Friday, Frank?
I heard a little rumor about this. Go ahead and
I'm pretty excited about it, actually. I've done a lot of research. This guy is amazing. His name is Eustace Conway. He's from the History Channel show Mountain Men. And he lives completely off the grid in the mountains of North Carolina. And his, you know, someone who works for him that I knew from the Ron Paul days, surprisingly enough, contacted me on Facebook and said, hey, you know, Eustace has some things he'd like to say. And I said, well, by all means. He said, you know, I'm not, I talked to him a little bit the other day on the phone. He's like, I'm not politically active, you know, in that way. Like, I don't watch television. I'm not on the internet. I don't have any electric. I'm not one of these people, right? But I have a perspective on this I think people need to hear, just because there's no motive behind it for me other than we're free people and this is what I think about it. And I said, well, we're going to call you on Friday and you could talk for as long as you'd like about all this. He's great.
I can't wait to. I love talking to people like that.
I just want to get like a good, you know, primer on just how he lives. Like, I've been watching clips from the show. So cool. So cool. Really smart guy, obviously.
It's a way of life that I often am jealous of.
Yeah.
You know, because and not only jealous in the way where you're talking about a certain level of independence, but also, I guess it's independence in different ways. Independence from, you know, when you say you're living off the grid and you're not plugged into everything that we deal with in suburban or urban areas, but then just a level of independence where you are 100% confident
that you can take care of yourself.
You can take care of yourself come hell or high water.
Yep.
You know, this guy is not going to be running to CVS to pick up a 24 count a case of water bottles if something goes wrong, you know, because he doesn't know how he's going to be able to drink clean water. So that's the whole thing here. You see how normally people have gotten used to being independent under the guise that most other basic necessities in life are going to be covered by large institutions or companies and governments, you know?
Well, he even said, you know, I don't need anything. I don't need anything from anybody. I don't need anything from anybody. I'm perfectly fine. Mm. Isn't that amazing?
A great way to live. Oh. I really envy that.
Yeah, I mean, he gets an infection, he knows how to treat it. He gets a cut, he knows how to stitch it up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait to talk to him. Anyway, in keeping with that, Daniel has been really pissed about what's going on in states and how certain states are handling this. And he wrote an article called Tyrant Governors and the Future of America. And I just published it this morning. Can I go through a little bit of this? Because I think you'll appreciate it.
Please.
Okay. He says, quote, it's a pandemic, stupid. What about people's right to live? You're putting others' lives in danger by not complying. Sorry you're inconvenienced for about a month so we can save lives. And church is not essential, end quote. The above statement came in response to the article I wrote about the Easter service conducted in Ohio and Idaho this past Sunday. I realize good people exist on both sides of the shelter down issue. But that said, as an Idahoan. And someone who seeks to preserve the principles upon which our country was founded, I want to offer a reasoned response. Why didn't we have a media frenzy during the H1N1 pandemic? I'm cutting a little bit here, partly because the powers that be didn't need to smear a president running for re-election nor destroy a wildly successful economy that ran counter to their stated goals. Let's look at a few numbers. As of Sunday evening, there were 27 coronavirus related deaths in Idaho. By way of comparison, there were 58 deaths from the flu last flu season, 101 the year prior and 72 the year before that. So let's talk about constitutional rights. Whenever a state joins the union, they agree that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. With that in mind, allow me to quote from the Supreme Court in 1866. The Constitution of the United States is a law for rulers and people, equally in war and in peace, and covers with the shield of its protection all classes of men at all times and under all circumstances. No doctrine involving more pernicious consequences was ever invented by the wit of man than that any of its provisions can be suspended during any of the great exigencies of government. In other words, no matter what emergency the government faces, the Constitution cannot be suspended, and no governor or agency can create a policy, declaration, or law that supersedes the Constitution. Then he quotes the Fifth Amendment, and he's basically making the argument that everything that state governors are doing, including deeming which businesses are essential or non-essential, is unconstitutional. and that there won't be any redress of or just compensation for businesses that are completely lost because the government decided that they weren't important enough to stay open. So he breaks down the constitutional argument behind all this. Like, yes, the government has the right in an emergency to, quote, quarantine people. That's somehow provable, I guess. But the way that this is being done is completely unconstitutional. And he ends with, I'm presenting these facts to present a bigger picture. The heart of the matter is the future of America. And with that as the focus, I don't think I'm being selfish. What I refuse to do is bow down to well-meaning but tyrannical government officials out of fear for a lack of a lack of personal responsibility. I'll end with a quote from Kim Reynolds, governor of Iowa, one of nine governors who did not issue any kind of lockdown order. She said, quote, I can't lock the state down. People also have to be responsible for themselves. Mm-hmm. It was really good.
Yeah.
Really good piece.
Well, I mean, as far as what I had wrote yesterday, because everybody was there's this back and forth between, of course, Cuomo, and everybody's on different pages on different days. And yesterday, because of the absolute authority, the authority is absolute thing right there. When I hear shit like that, I don't care who says it. It's cringe to me. And I understand what kind of a situation we're growing up in. So I can see why some people think that that is right, depending on who is in charge. If you don't like who's in charge, then of course it's evidence that we live in a tyranny. But, you know, the problem here is I said this, that governors should have always been on their own in this situation, which means that, you know, they have to also have a plan to sustain life in their state, because they are the president of their state.
Yes.
To sustain life in their state under a condition of a mandatory that they order a mandatory shutdown of their state economies. You can't shut down your state and then ask the president
to subsidize you.
Ask the president of the general government to give you cash, you know. And then the other thing I brought up was Trump and the constitutional stance on this too, where the other reality, I've always acknowledged that Trump is in a between a rock and a hard place with this stuff, because if he took the constitutional stance from the onset of this situation, if he was vetoing the spending bills, et cetera, he would get destroyed by people on both sides of the political camps. But wherever the hell they are, both parties, they would come down on him who because they've all of us, we have never, ever known the federal government to be anything but daddy. We run to daddy. That's it. You know, so you have no clue how many people think they're conservative, but they're taking these hardline authoritarian responses. But the only difference between conservative and progressive these days is a conservative will many times wrap tyranny in an American flag.
Yeah.
And the progressive will burn the flag.
I can't take these, like, whenever you make this argument that, you know, what's happening right now is a little terrifying and we've put up with it up until now just because it was the right thing to do, I think. But there's got to come a time where people are like, okay, I'm finished with this now. Enough is enough. I'm making a decision for myself. Like somebody tweeted at me the other day when I said something to this effect that the government makes you run out of a building that's on fire too, but you don't call that tyrannical. And I'm like, let's talk about this for a second. What you just said is completely asinine. Like, the government does not force me to run out of a flaming building.
My will to live does.
I mean, yeah, you know. And then he brought up this person who deleted all their tweets after I pretty much destroyed it. I had to. Said that the church pastor that had continued to hold services in the face of the pandemic died of coronavirus. And I said, guess what? It wasn't the government's job to protect his life. It was his own. And he made a choice based on the information he had in front of him. And he chose the risk of continuing to coexist with people who may be sick and may get him sick. And he has now sadly succumbed to the consequences of that decision. But it's not up to the government to make that decision for him.
Yeah, Tracy, don't you understand the government wants every last one of us to live forever and to our fullest potential, even if we have to spend years inside of our living rooms not being able to go outside?
Yeah, I know. It's all.
I saw it because and it's getting laughable. Now, you know, my brother will text me and friends of mine who pay attention, but don't pay too much attention. And in the past have not paid any attention, but they're all becoming a little bit more interested. And day by day, the at the most basic level of this, I'm getting people texting me and just laughing at how every day that it seems to be like, all right, this wasn't as bad as they say it was going to be for one reason or another. And yet we're still getting articles from one outlet or another, one expert or another, extending how long this may have to go on.
I'm seeing now 2022.
Yep, that's what I was sent yesterday, that we may have to be doing this quarantine cycling stuff until 2022. You're talking about three or four flu seasons are going to pass in between then just to get rid of COVID-19. Are you kidding me?
I think, you know, the goalposts have shifted so damn much, Frank. The whole social distancing and stuff was not to stop people from getting this virus so that there were no cases of it, which now everyone seems to think is what this was for. This was to slow the curve. This was to slow down the amount of people infected at any one time so that the healthcare system wasn't overwhelmed with critically ill patients. It was never to eradicate the virus.
Yeah, because it would be ridiculous to say we can't go outside until illness has been eradicated from the United States. Can you imagine if people were being shut down for just, I mean, with the numbers that we are seeing right now, there is no reason why these states, these governors, these mayors, the CDC, there's no reason why this shouldn't have been happening every year for the last 100 years.
Yeah. Every flu season, every time there was a measles outbreak in New York.
Yeah. This is, so it's frightening. As well as becoming a little bit funny at you know, because they're at the tail end of this and got to keep pushing.
Yeah.
But
Carpe tweeted something funny last night. Carpe Donctum. He said, my 7-year-old just rappelled down our rock wall and asked me if the MSM thinks that Trump's press briefings are just propaganda. Why do they keep sending reporters to ask questions? And why are all of them begging for extra questions? I didn't know what to tell him. Because you know the liberals are always like, my 5-year-old asked me yesterday.
Yeah, I couldn't answer. I really didn't. Yeah, well, first of all, and I love because those really amazing fake stories that people love talking about. It's the same kind of stories where like then everybody on the bus stood up and clapped.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah. Crazy nonsense. First of all, if you get stumped by questions that your 5-year-old asks, how stupid are you?
Got a little problem there.
You can't outwit a 5-year-old? My God.
I couldn't answer. I just couldn't answer. It was too much.
It was too much. I had the answer, but I didn't want to reveal the truth. Well, if they were that profound to have asked a really good question, then why wouldn't they be able to handle the answer?
How do I explain to my 5-year-old how most of America elected such a cretin as president? How could I possibly explain the humanity of that?
Well, yeah, how do you explain the gaunt look in the face of Barack Obama as he is now endorsing Joe Biden for president?
Well, what a coincidence.
Now, he looks like a ghost that you would put in. My tan is better than Barack Obama's at this point. He looks like a ghost. He almost looks like a pale green color.
You're talking about in his endorsement video?
Oh, yeah. He looks like, you know, at the zombie castle at Playland in Rye. He looks like one of the faces that'll jump out at you.
I mean, it's really something, his video. There's a portion of it.
12 minutes long if you find a small portion of with all the best hits.
I got a minute of it that Ted Cruz retweeted, and it's funny what he said. So let's play it.
Okay.
This is something. One
thing everybody has learned by now is that the Republicans occupying the White House and running the U.S. Senate are not interested in progress. They're interested in power. They've shown themselves willing to kick millions off their health insurance and eliminate pre-existing condition protections for millions more.
Which is complete bull.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing that President Trump has stood by that I think is still a little bit messed up, too, is the pre-existing conditions rule.
Oh, yeah. He's gotten a lot of crap from conservatives for saying we're keeping pre-existing conditions around. guaranteeing pre-existing conditions.
It destroys the whole point.
It destroys the whole concept of insurance. It's no longer insurance. It's then welfare.
Yes. Yes.
You know, it's then welfare because people don't understand this. And you say, well, it's still heartless. Well, no, because here's the biggest thing. And I know this is going to take away a little bit from the Obama thing, but I want to talk about this tonight on my show there, too. Oprah came out, and talking about the stresses. Everybody is trying to get a racial angle on this virus now, too.
That's so stupid. It's so stupid.
And I pointed it out real quick because, you know how everything that has broken in the news in the last 4 years, they've been praying and they've been selling. This is Trump's Hurricane Katrina. OK, now the biggest undertone of Hurricane Katrina was that it took a massive toll on Black Americans. Kanye West at the time, up there with Mike Myers talking about George Bush hates black people. So this was something that they really, really wanted. We saw the clips of these people on MSNBC and CNN giddy with the fact that this may be Trump's Katrina time and time again. Well, now they're all getting together to talk about how this is extremely troublesome of a virus for black Americans. And then again, they don't go into the fact that it's because black Americans, for one reason or another, have high instances of asthma, diabetes, hypertension, pretty much pre-existing health conditions. Things that, I have diabetes in both sides of my family, which is why at a young age, I committed to exercise and as clean a living as I could. I don't drink a lot of alcohol at all. It really comes down to one thing. Even though some people are trying to make this about race, it really comes to highlight how we are a very unhealthy country. This is why one problem chains off into the other.
Yes.
Where not only do you have this inability sometimes, and you know what? For as much money as it costs to eat organic, it costs nothing to say no to certain foods.
No, agreed. It's a culture thing. It's a culture thing.
It's for everybody. The whole thing here is that with all the race reporting on the virus, white people are dying from the very same thing, pre-existing conditions. And it's because a lot of white people are not we have shirked a lot of responsibility for our daily lives and our health. We're not really into it. Healthcare in the United States is a joke. We are a symptom treatment system for the most part. Now, on top of that, when you talk about – so there's our personal health problems that we have underlying all this. Then the economic problems is something else. Because of how highly regulated healthcare is, it's impossible for anybody to go out there because you say, okay, well, there's tens of millions of people who don't have health insurance because they can't afford it. Well, I don't know very many people who could afford – a couple thousands of dollars a month and a $15,000 deductible.
Nobody can.
And this is all because of regulations. And if that's what the marketplace looks like, then you imagine if you deregulated, how many people out there who are in the healthcare business, even just doctors, primary care physicians, who will be able, when they are not under the thumb of government regulation, to come up with packages or to negotiate on a personal one-to-one basis with people in communities who have limited funds, that people want to provide a service so that people who have nothing can work within their means. You're erasing options. You're erasing options for people by going the Obama route.
They not only that, but oops, I want to go back. Damn it. Not only that, but, you know, the doctors could even technically form their own group, quote, health insurance policy inside their office that everybody could join.
And people can form healthcare associations.
Yeah.
Cooperatives, associations. It's
a couple years ago. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
A couple years ago, I did a whole video on Rand Paul's plan that he had introduced in response to the request for new ideas. It was fantastic. Fantastic. I don't think the government should be dipping around in this anyway, but whatevs.
Well, it all comes down to what is ideal and what is possible. You know, to even talk this way about, well, you can't force people to take on new clients who are off on the bet. Insurance, like anything, is a game of risk. It's a bet. The insurance company, in exchange for your premium, they are betting that you're staying healthy. And you, as the person who's buying insurance, is betting that you are going to get sick. And that risk assessment keeps everything in balance there. So that if you do get sick, there's something there. But they say, okay, well, I think that you're going to stay healthy. But you guys keep each other in check. And there's a little bit of a safety net there. When you say, a guy is coming to you, I need health insurance. I have diabetes, cancer, AIDS, everything. And the health insurance company has to say, all right. It's just money. I mean, what is that? And that's why everybody's premiums goes up, because you're taking away why the system was even there and how it actually stabilized costs in some way and why it was actually insurance. So when you destroy that entire industry, I mean, there's no need for insurance companies anymore. You say, okay, well, that's great. Let's get rid of the insurance companies. All right. Now you're just dealing with one provider, government. And we know how great that is. Just look at the VA if you want to see what kind of health care coverage you're going to get.
I know. And the only thing that made the VA better was President Trump opening it up so that people could see their private doctors.
So they can take money. Yeah. So that they can take money and they can go and use it as vouchers elsewhere, which is another reason why. And so you say, oh, that's how you made the VA better. You made money available to veterans so they can go and take an allotment and go to private insurance, private companies, private doctors, and spend the money how they will. Okay. Well, then go ahead and tell me again why you don't like school choice. It's the same exact thing. People are against school choice, taking money and going to private schools or whatever the hell else.
Well, people aren't
instead of feeding people.
That. Unions have programmed people to be against that.
Yeah. Well.
Well, this was an interesting segue.
Yeah. Oh, play a little bit more of Obama.
Oh no, there's plenty more to play. I haven't even gotten to the best part yet, but I had to stop on that pre-existing conditions bullshit. Here we go.
Well, the more people understand why, you know, the easier it'll be for people to defend the concept behind it. Because if you say pre-existing condition coverage is ridiculous, most people around you will gasp.
Yeah, they get angry at you heartless.
Yeah, you heartless bastard. You want the sick to die? Like, no, you there's like 10,000 other factors you're not even considering that makes an ideal reality into a reality. If you try to put idealism into legislation, it will usually make things worse. And that's just it's hard to balance that out.
I got another good one after this, so let's play the rest of Obama here. God, he looks horrible.
They've disregarded American principles of rule of law and voting rights and transparency. Basic norms that previous administrations observed regardless of party. Principles that are the bedrock of our democracy.
Whatever.
So our country's future hangs on this election. And it won't be easy.
Here.
The other side has a massive war chest. The other side has a propaganda network with little regard for the truth.
Hold on. So Ted Cruz tweets, shorter Obama. Dems only have 8 of the 10 richest American billionaires, including Bloomberg, Bezos, and the Google founders, plus Soros and Steyer. And we've only got ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, WAPO, and New York Times, and just about every other newspaper in America. How can we compete on money and propaganda?
Yeah, how can we compete? You say they have a vast propaganda network. It's like 20% of Fox.
Of OAN and three hosts on Fox.
Yeah, we have OAN that not everybody even has. It has on television. They have to follow all of their coverage on Twitter, and then you have 20% of the staff in Fox that's somewhat reliable to make a cogent point. You can rely on maybe 20% of Fox to make a cogent point from time to time, and that is that's our advantage.
It's really comical. Like everything he just said is exactly what Democrats. It's reflection. It is everything. It's sick. And I hate the lisp. The lisp on the S's. The whistle on the S's in his freaking
the whistle.
God.
Yeah, he's the beaver from Lady and the Tramp. He's the beaver from Lady and the Tramp on the zoo.
Oh, Frank. And then I just saw this. And you know, Mark Dice did a Brian Stelter video. I'll show you that in a second, but here is, and I want to talk about Spygate a little bit too, but here is a an article. Andrew Cuomo's daughter quickly deletes tweet showing the Kay Guevara photo in the living room. To Democrats, so basically it's, why does Andrew Cuomo's daughter have a framed photo of communist murderer Kay Guevara in her living room? She had to delete the tweet. It's framed. Whoops. In the background.
Framed.
Yeah.
You know how much a good frame costs? Hundreds.
Freaking horrible.
Yeah, and these are the people who talk about anti-racism, anti-homophobia. You should read some of Guevara's writings about black people and gay people and his murderous ways. But it's all good. It's all good. It's about the revolution and fighting against capitalism.
Yeah. Yeah. There's another one, too.
You mentioned voting rights. Whose voting rights are being trampled right now? So they have a virus that they're using to talk about. Let's make everybody vote by mail. And then you look at who else is going door to door like trick or treaters with the ballot harvesting?
Well, yeah, that's
what I want to talk about.
I know. That's starting to come up a lot. Man. This was the funniest headline, though, from the Babylon Bee that I've seen in such a long time. The Babylon Bee is so good, Frank. Yeah. Here, medical experts confirm Democrats have developed herd immunity to sexual assault allegations.
Yeah, it's true.
Because how Joe Biden's rape allegation is being handled, we haven't even gotten to talk about yet, especially Alyssa Milano, who came out. You saw this was a week ago or two where she said, yep. Oh, you know, there's, you know, we have to give everybody the benefit of the doubt or like innocent until proven guilty. And I'm sitting there like, do these people, even the left was coming after her, do these people even understand? Because now that Bernie has sold himself out, got another house, whatever he's done, and now endorsed Biden. Biden's the guy at this point, honestly. At this point, now that he's endorsed by Warren, Obama, and Bernie, I don't think they're going to throw someone else in there. I think they're going to run with Biden. What do you think?
As of right now, I still can't believe that Joe Biden really is the guy that's going to be on the ballot in November. But this Obama endorsement goes a long way to saying maybe.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think so. I really do, which is pretty great. And if you ask my opinion.
Unless. Oh, yeah. No, it is pretty great. I mean, I don't know anybody else who really can. Seriously, remember, the only one who had anything really organic going for him was Bernie. And so anybody anybody that they put up now is not going to be authentic. It's going to be a media creation trying to convince people that you want this. Yes, this is the answer. You want this. This could work. They're trying to tell people this. Now, as far as propaganda go, or not propaganda, but as far as psychological operations go, maybe the endorsement from Obama makes it seem like this was the guy so that in the event that over the next 5 months, Biden has to pull himself out of the race, it seems like it was an extenuating circumstance he couldn't get around. It's not because people weren't coalescing around him, because here's Obama, you know? So that's the other thing I'm looking at here, too, where it's still early enough. It's early enough. And you know, the fact that Joe Biden has been able to survive
the Ukraine's.
Yeah. Well, and remember, he's been able to right now, if you're talking about what it looks like to people at home, if you're a Democrat, Joe Biden has been able to survive the Ukraine accusations thus far. He was pretty much the center focus of why the president was impeached. Afterwards, when he was dead in the water, they were able to revive his candidacy to give some more credence to all of those impeachment narratives by getting everybody to jump out of the race before Super Tuesday, making him the front runner overnight, even though he was polling fourth and fifth in many places. And now Barack Obama stops dragging his feet and endorses him. So it seems like it's just as long as Joe Biden can, as long as he can leave the public eye and leave this election under the guise of he really was the guy, but he just sadly had to bow out because his health was whatever or something going on. I think that this has all just been about making sure that he looked as legitimate as possible, because I still can't believe that he's going to be the guy in November.
Yeah. No, we're going to get into in a second. We're going to talk about we're going to talk about Spygate a little bit and what's coming out in these declassified footnotes, because I want to touch on that and make sure we clear it up. This election is just completely out of the realm of even my grasp right now. I don't even know how it's going to it all depends on what happens in the next 3 weeks. Because yesterday at the press conference, President Trump was starting to say, yeah, some places might be opening up sooner than we thought, which would be great. Let's get back to business, shall we? I really would like to get back to business. I would like to be able to, you know, go get my nails done or go get my haircut or, you know, do normal things in my town again. I really would. I can get my pet groomed, though, which will happen tomorrow. That I'm excited about. Let's quickly, as a segue, listen to little Brian Stelter, shall we?
Sure.
Prefer these small fights with the press instead of focusing on the virus. And that anti-media propaganda video is an example. He started this briefing with that anti-media propaganda video, which is nothing short of disgraceful.
You're better, just in my honest opinion. You're better.
Either way, I always have a fun time listening to it because I like how Mark Dice gets the dub so nicely.
Yeah.
And he dubs over the actual thing so nicely. And it's true because I don't know. Especially with Brian Stelter, it's the words, the way he chooses to articulate his thoughts. It sounds so much like a elementary school play. It's embarrassing. Like the play where all the kids only have one microphone and they have to pass it around, you know?
Yeah. You know, did you see the video that came out from Mad Liberals yesterday, which was the Independence Day scene?
Yeah.
I was so excited for this to come out. I couldn't wait to see. I had to record that little clip for him so he could make it look right. So like I had Helga record a couple of scenes of me lovingly or like with that look that the little girl has in the real movie looking up.
Wait, you were in it?
Yeah.
Oh, I watched it last night. I didn't even see you.
Yeah, I look up at Ted Cruz.
Oh, my God.
I'm on there for like 10 seconds. I'm like,
oh, no, get out of here.
Yes, I'm right here. Oh. I'm at.
We're fighting for our right to live.
I'm at.
Hold on. Send it to me.
It should be the day.
Got to keep. Oh, man. Because I saw people like Dilly and all that. And I'm like,
I can't believe you missed me.
I did.
Yeah.
We will not go quietly into the night. I love Independence Day.
I am on there.
We will not vanish without a fight.
43 seconds through 48 seconds. Five full seconds on my face. Five full seconds out of a minute and 31 seconds on my face.
Send it to me.
I did. I texted it to you.
Oh, text it.
I'm going to make everybody wait for your reaction when you scroll.
All right. Pressing play now. Mm-hmm. You said I said what? What's the mark?
42 seconds.
42.
The 4th of July will no longer be known as an American.
I can't believe I missed it. You look at Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
I can't believe I missed that.
Me either.
Now I have to watch Independence Day again.
Oh, great movie.
We love it. It's just so funny. And there's so many inside jokes. They're so good.
They are. I like inside jokes. Let's
hope to be a part of one day.
Yeah. I'm a little angry with you right now, but
why?
For not seeing me in there.
I watched it once last night.
You didn't
I
watch
couldn't
it
believe
close
how many
enough.
Faces. You're right. I didn't. I obviously did not.
So anyway, let's talk about Spygate real quick, shall we? I say shall we 4 times in the show today. Okay, so last week there were 4 footnotes declassified so that they were unredacted for the most part and released to Ron, what's his name? Which senator? It was Grassley and holy moly, I can't remember. Hold on.
Grassley and Bassley.
Grassley and Bassley. No, it was Ron Johnson. My bad. Ron Johnson.
Ron Johnson.
Senator
Ron Jeremy.
I just see his fat little head when you say that.
Which one? All right, keep going. Just keep going.
I love
Don't
you.
Laugh.
Okay. So... So they declassified these 4 footnotes. And they now there are all kinds of reports coming out that I tweeted when it happened. I said, look, the FBI is guilty of colluding with Russians to influence the outcome of the 2016 election. It was sarcastic. I didn't literally mean that they actually fell for Russian disinformation, but a lot of people are giving the FBI this out that they fell for Russian disinformation, that the Russians were behind all of this information in the Steele dossier. Not true. Not true. The Russians were not behind anything in the Steele dossier. And the reason, so one of the main points there, they point out the Cohen and Prague thing, right? Like Cohen went to Prague to get hacked material or whatever he did, right? But remember, the Cohen and Prague thing came from abuse of the 702 database.
Yep.
By FBI contractors. They found the wrong Cohen. They found a Cohen that had gone to Prague. And they stuck it in there. So Brennan et al. Created this information, filtered it to Steele, who put it in the dossier and attributed it to Russians that didn't ever say the things that are attributed to them. And they got their hands on one of these people and interviewed him, primary subsource from Steele. And the subsource said, I never said that. Why do you think the subsource said, I never said that? Because he didn't. It was all bullshit. They did it on purpose. They put these lies in there on purpose. And in one last attempt to cover their own asses, just in case this should happen, they attributed it to Russian disinformation. So the IG report, which was an absolutely important and stellar debunking of the entire FISA narrative that had been pushed out in front of our faces for 2 years by the idiots on the other side of the aisle. When I say the other side of the aisle, I mean the side of lies, treason, and untruths. That's the same thing as lies. Anyway, it debunked all that. It exemplified what the FBI did wrong. It was so blatant that this IG, who did on several occasions throw them a lifeline and say, oh, yeah, you know, we couldn't determine whether or not this was intentional. But they did, you know, he did crucify them in many ways and say things were intentional and that he couldn't say otherwise. You know what I'm saying? But he still gave him cover in there. And what, remember this point, because people are forgetting that these footnotes are not coming from Durham or Barr. They're coming from the IG report. And what did Barr and Durham do publicly right as it was being released?
I don't know. What did he do?
No, you do. The day that the IG report was released, Barr and Durham said, we do not agree with many.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
We don't agree with a lot of these conclusions. I am going to say that transmutes to what was in the footnote. They knew the footnotes, like Barr and Durham knew what was in those footnotes when they had the report. They didn't get the redacted version. They got the full version. So it's not like this is new. This was in there already. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And I've been following along with this. I saw another long article of review about everything that was going on with the NSA and Mike Rogers. And it's just good to double back on all of this. And also, I was thinking the same thing late last week. I think it was late last week. It was either Friday or it happened over the weekend, and I covered it on Monday or so. But I was thinking exactly what Dan Bongino had come out and said when we started seeing some of these headlines from the media talking about another moving of the goalposts. The first one that we had was it was a couple of months of the dossier is true, it's verified, and it is damning. Then the one that we realized that the dossier was unsubstantiated, lies, and it was funded and created by Fusion GPS and the Clinton campaign. Then they said, no. The Russian investigation was all a matter of the Papadopoulos thing.
Yeah.
And now we're getting finally we're getting down to transcripts. We know so much about Joseph Mifsud. The whole thing stinks to high heaven. And now here we go, another shifting. And it has to be the final shift where they say, well, it was Russian disinformation and our patriotic intelligence community was taken for a ride. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They're taken for a ride.
The thing about that pisses me off more than anything, and I've said this for years now, years. If it is true what they're saying about the FBI and our intelligence community being taken for a ride, we are in such a huge world of trouble, greater by scores than an attempted coup on a sitting president. If they're that incompetent and stupid, can you imagine? Well,
Go on. No, I can't imagine, because you want to know, there's other things that we have spoken about in the past, Tracy. Think about all of the things, all the different topics that we have spoken about from Pizzagate on down, as big and as ugly as it gets on down. NXIVM, Jeffrey Epstein, everything. Okay, just right there, Alex Acosta. When Alex Acosta, the labor secretary, was fired last summer because we started seeing what his role in letting Jeffrey Epstein get off with only a 13-month limited or house arrest sentence was going on. Otherwise, oh, wow, this is amazing. This is a Trump guy that let him off. Like, no, the bigger story here is that there was a bigger power that stood in between him. What is going on? I mean,
I don't know, Frank.
I need it. Okay, wait. All right. Hold on.
All right.
Pause.
Okay. Oh, go ahead.
We're back. Okay. You want to talk about probable cause. Now, if the intelligence community can come across this Russian disinformation, and that's probable cause enough to open up a monstrosity of an investigation into a presidential candidate and then a president, a sitting president, and drag it out for years, even though it eventually comes up with nothing. They followed that rabbit. They went down into that rabbit hole and got lost for 3 years. But if you say that there is probable cause to look deeper into why Jeffrey Epstein only was allowed to be given 13 months, or if there is probable cause into anything else that we have dug up that is suspicious, and that everybody just said, "Oh, Hull, you conspiracy theorist, mm-hmm. lunatic." Mm-hmm. You want to talk about, 'cause that's pretty much what they're saying, that these Russian rumors gave us probable cause to go out there and kick over every rock possible just to be sure. Well, I have a couple of things I'd love for you to be sure about then. I have a couple of topics I'd love for you to investigate. Will you listen to us? Nope. Nope, because it's not about Russian disinformation hoodwinking the intelligence community. It's about the intelligence community wanting to take out Donald Trump.
That's pretty much the assumption. And with Donald Trump, everything, you know, that we've been trying to accomplish so that they could. Can you just imagine? Okay, first of all, I'm not sure we would have this pandemic if Hillary Clinton was president, because there would be no reason to tank the economy. It would be in a shit show as it is. I'm really starting to think that there are some more nefarious things behind this virus than just it escaped from a lab.
It is.
I really do. I'm sorry. And then number two, do you think that we would, what do you think that that wench would have done if we were to be under her administration during this?
I don't know. I don't know, because first of all, we would have doubled down on a lot of things. They may still have needed the virus, though, Tracy. I've got to be honest. They may still have needed a virus. They needed something to cause a zero responsibility, zero accountability tanking of the fake world economy. With all this fake money and the World Bank and the currencies. Because that's the new thing. You remember when Hillary Clinton on the campaign trail and during the debates in 2016 was fantasizing about a shared power grid with Mexico?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
She was fantasizing about shared power grids with Central and South America. You want to talk about world consolidation. So I'm not completely convinced that even if Hillary Clinton were president, that something like a virus wouldn't have been needed to tank everything and say, all right, we got to come together and think of something even more stable. Just like after every world war, it was either League of Nations, UN. It's the same exact thing. So I'm not convinced that we wouldn't have got it with a Hillary Clinton. I just think that the media would have been a lot more forgiving. And I think that we would have been it would have been a lot more of a hopeful thing. They would have managed it a lot differently. But this is an opportunity for people who want to take bigger control over the world, which we're seeing it right now from the idea of vaccine passports and tracking people through phones out in the open. And it's not conspiratorial. Everybody thinks it's actually a really good thing. Because it's, you know, we want to make sure that people are doing healthy, what they're told.
You know, make sure everyone stays healthy.
That's it. Vaccines and censorship. And so it's just one of those things, or I can't even rule out that this wouldn't have been part of the plan, because you had to have tanked everything that was there before to be able to have something new rise from the ashes that was even more binding than what we already had. So I don't know.
So in that vein, President Trump took what? He took the funding away from the WHO, which I think was the World Health Organization, which I think is great. Now let's do the UN. What do you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that the director actually did he step down or was he replaced? There was something in the library last night that I read. Hold on. It says, breaking, Dr. Juan Guaido has announced he is the interim director of the WHO, replacing Dr. Tedros Adhanom. The Trump administration will formally recognize momentarily. This coming from Dan Cohen, who is a journalist, apparently, but I've never heard of him, and I don't have any idea if this is actually real. It's great to know. Anyway, that's what it said. Okay. You have been listening, Frank. Well, you haven't been listening. You've been participating to the Dark to Light podcast with...
Didn't even know it was Wednesday, Val.
And me, Beans. I said my own end. So, so stupid. You guys, don't forget to listen to Friday's show at 2:30 Eastern time. We will have Eustace Conway on the show. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you on Friday.
Yep, later.
This is an MJ Morning Show podcast quick fix on Radio Influence.
Johnny Stinkface, it was simple. He was supposed to be a really aggressive shock jock on the air. But off the air, he was a very nice. So he would call up his interviewers and be like, "Hey, it's Johnny Stankface. Just want to get prepared for our interview here, and just want to talk." And then when he gets on the air, he's just a shock jock talking about tits and tsunamis.
All right, here we go.
Hello, this is Dr. speaking.
Hi, Dr.
Yes, this is she.
Hi, hey, what's going on? It's Johnny. I contacted you over email a couple days ago. You remember me?
Hi, Johnny. Sure I do. Hi, how you doing?
Great, great, great. You're so nice. I really appreciate you coming on the show. I know you're really busy.
All right.
Now, let me explain to you how this show works. Of course, my name is Johnny, and this is my normal speaking voice. Now, when we start recording the interview and I actually hit record, I'm going to turn into my character that I play on the air, which is named Johnny Stankface.
Okay. All right.
It's totally not who I am, but I'm sort of forced to do it. You know, I got to have a job, you know. You remember my name just in case?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
Stankface.
Stankface.
Stankface?
Yes, Johnny Stankface. Okay?
Stankface. Okay.
All right, so let's get started with the interview here. And are we ready to record? Okay. All right, Johnny Stankface Show coming down. 3, 2, and...
Yeah! All right, welcome back. Another edition of the most exciting, most shocking, most in-your-face radio show in all of America, the Johnny Stankface Show. Welcome, everybody. Starting off the show with a bang, we got a guest on the line. Aren't you there?
I'm here.
What are you laughing at?
The MJ Morning Show podcast can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, MJMorningShow.com, and RadioInfluence.com.